record to reflect that the time is 4:30 p.m. The date is Friday, April 22nd, 2005. Hey, members present, Representative Lynn, Kant, Guttenberg.
I'd like to point out the gentleman Rokeberg in the second row with the wonderful tie.
Rokeberg, Ledoux, and Chairman Anderson.
Matches the speaker.
I'm
going to
ask him a question about the car power.
Call the witness.
We have two bills today, House Bill 157 and House Bill 249. House Bill 157, I'd like to bring up first. We've had attempted negotiation over the last few weeks, and it doesn't sound like we've come to any compromise. While I was out of state, suddenly there's a finance referral, which ticks me off. Some folks say that that was always intended regardless. Now I think because negotiations are off, we'll move it on to House Finance. Who knows if that it will go through that committee. I still think there's merit in what the fuel distributors have talked about, but I want the bill to move on now, and I think I've been fair enough to hold it in Labor and Commerce. So if there aren't any amendments, I'd like to at least move the bill on to that committee, which is jam-packed, and we probably won't even be able to schedule for a while.
Everybody else wants.
Could I have, first of all, any amendments? Hearing none, public testimony, I will close. And if I could have a motion to move House Bill 157 out of committee to the House Finance Committee.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ledoux.
I'll move CS for House Bill 157 out of committee with attached fiscal note and notes and individual recommendations.
Any objection? Hearing none, so moved. We'll go next to House Bill 249. Representative Hawker is here, and we will have him present that bill. And I am told from information received previous to the committee that we'll hold it one day, look, addressing maybe the cost, the $200 amount versus the one or $2 versus $150. But I'll let Mike go through that. Looks like we have a lot of folks to testify, and I'll be honest, because we have caucus coming up, if everyone could keep their testimony, 2 minutes, that would be about 15 minutes. I think Chief Monaghan and the rest can keep it to 2 minutes each. Presumption is the majority of them support the bill, and I definitely want to hear from the Alaska Telephone Association. So, Representative Hawker, go ahead, then we'll get their information in. And
Mr. Chairman, thank you. For the record, Representative Mike Hawker, District 32, Anchorage. Pleasure to be with you folks today. My first trip to the new Labor and Commerce Committee room. Housekeeping and expedite, I'll be happy to go to any length you'd like, but I'll do as much an expedited a presentation as I can here. House Bill 249 is an old friend of most of us. This bill was batted around last session, and we really, it's just such an important piece of legislation, we wanted to bring it back this year. House Bill 249 is the act, what we refer to as the 911 bill. It would allow municipalities to add a surcharge to telephone bills for the purposes of paying for enhanced 911 systems. And members of the committee, I'd like to emphasize, this is a bill that we can get bogged down in technical issues. We can go all over, you know, business rights and all kinds of issues, but first and foremost, I ask you to remember, House Bill 249 is about simply about saving lives. This is something that folks, you know, everybody knows 911. You expect to dial 911, and you expect to find somebody who's got their butt planted in a chair answering your crisis. And access to a modern 911 system, it literally can be the difference between life and death for folks. Specifically, again, we're with this bill authorizing a funding mechanism for enhanced 911 services. And enhanced 911 are the additional system features and capabilities that ultimately allow, if someone dials a 911 call due to with the technological innovations available today, the dispatcher knows where that call originated. It has the identity, specifically where it came from, and they know the number that was dialed from, so they can give a call back. Sounds pretty simple, but when someone's incapacitated in a crisis situation and all they can do is hit the three numbers 911 on a phone, you can reach the emergency medical services you need. The bill specifically, and if I may reference that there's also this process has been going on simultaneously through our good friends in the Senate. Actually, what we've asked the committee to do is adopt a committee substitute that is essentially equal to a bill that has recently moved is making its way through the Senate. That committee substitute would be the one, if I could, I would address very quickly here.
Okay. You want a motion to adopt that?
That would be very kind of you, sir.
Okay. Representative Cott, would you move that? Version F?
Well, then, Mr. Chairman, I would make the motion to adopt the CS for 249 version F dated today.
For discussion purposes,
discussion
so moves.
Discussion purposes.
Yes, before us. Go ahead, Representative Hawker.
Thank you, sir. Quick run through of the bill. We, you know, set a first section here. Section one is one of those that just, you know, accommodating the sections added to this bill to other statutes. We then provide changes in the amounts that a municipality may authorize for the charges. And one of the biggest issues with this bill in the past was that the caps, this ability that a phone company, that what a municipality could ask a phone company to charge on the municipality's behalf was unlimited. This bill is quite different in that it creates a limit. The CS that we have before us provides a $2 a month limit for each telephone line. And if a city wants to go beyond that limit, again, protecting the consumers in the city, they have to take that to a vote. And it takes a popular vote in the cities to go beyond the $2 limit. And I emphasize that was a compromise position. There are some municipalities, I see folks here representing municipalities who'd like to be well beyond that number. And I suspect we'll hear from folks who'd like to be less. But again, the process of this building is reaching a compromise where we can make something good happen in our communities. Section also being added indicates or is that when a municipality imposes a 911 surcharge, they have to tell their customers about it, and they have to explain why they're doing it. Section B provides a very strong stricture on what the money may be used for. You know, we do not want this to be another an unbridled tax mechanism for municipalities to go out and build swimming pools. This very clearly states that it is for this equipment. Section 4 provides also limits on multi-line systems, a lot of definitions, and again, being a spirit of compromise, I think provides reasonable protections for both consumers, taxpayers, as well as still providing an adequate 911 system. The home rule municipality law again indicates that that basically it applies in all home rule and general law municipalities, which would encompass those offering 911 systems. With that, certainly, I would defer to the committee at this point. I mean, that's the high order drill on the bill.
No, thank you, Representative Hawker. Okay, are there questions for the sponsor? And if there are not, then we'll go to the different police forces calling in Representative Guttenberg.
And I'm not sure, you know, if you're not the appropriate person to answer, that's fine. And welcome to the illustrious Labor and Commerce Room.
A pleasure to be here. Through the chair, it's a pleasure to be here, sir.
On page 4, section 4, the multi-line communication system, starting on line 16, a municipality may by ordinance elect to require an enhanced 911 system from a multi-line communication system. And then it goes on. How is that going to work? I mean, what is it like, the ARCO building or Fairbanks, the Alyeska building, large building with one or two basic trunk lines going in and then 30 or 40 or 150 additional lines?
And with apologies there, sir, your reference, I had gotten off page here.
Page 4? Section 4.
Section 4, okay. Again, for the technical aspects, what I would ask is that you refer, if I may, through the chair, sir.
Sure.
I believe we've got Mr. Doolittle, who's a technical expert on these systems with the Municipality of Anchorage, who would be able to answer a more technical question there.
Yep.
All right. That's fine.
Okay. Why don't we go, Representative Roper, what was your question?
Yeah, very quickly, Mr.
Sure.
Chairman. Representative Hawker, have you read or are you familiar with the March 10th, 2005 docket of the SEC, CC docket number 898170, the March 05 docket that regards it's the truth in billing and billing format matter. Are you familiar with that?
Through the chair, I have not got that document in front of me. I am not aware of
it. It's about mandated or non-mandated service charges. Are you familiar with that?
Through the chair, Representative Roper, no, I do not believe that I am personally, sir.
Okay, I'll defer perhaps somebody else.
Okay. Seeing no other questions, we'll go to
Thank you.
Representative Cott, I'm sorry, I didn't see your hand.
Representative Hocker, on page 3, when the search, this is the area that deals with what the surcharge may be used for. And this was a problem area, I think, last year with some. It says it can be used, may not be used for any capital operating costs, or may not be used for any capital operational costs for emergency responses that occur after a call is dispatched. Okay, never mind, I'll hold that question. I think I got the answer.
Okay. Thank you, sir. And if I may just gratuitously offer an answer to that, to the general question on the costs allowable. In my discussions with members of law enforcement, the emergency response community, they have looked at this, and particularly our community of Anchorage Eagle River. It may not be their choice of language, but they felt that it was something that provided actually a very strong restriction that would allow them to put the core of the system in place without stepping over. And again, the idea was not to be paying for police cars, not to be paying for ambulances, not to be a tax mechanism, but this is the core service they need to operate the response system.
Okay, what I'm going to do, just to reiterate, Walt, I'm going to have you up first, then Tim Rogers, Bill Doolittle, Chuck Kopp, Ed Oberts, Linda Freed, then Jim Rode. I'm not going to forget you. Certainly you can bring in your thoughts from the Alaska Telephone Association. I don't think there's anyone else on the testify. Then what I'll do is I'll hold the bill. I definitely want to get the bill moving because it's really important, but we'll hold it till early next week and then bring it back up and I think zooming out with some compromise here. So, Chief Monaghan, if you could stick to 2 minutes, if everyone sticks to 2 minutes, please, then we can finish because we have another meeting we have to go to at 5. So go ahead, Chief Monaghan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Walt Monaghan. For the record, I am the Anchorage Police Chief. I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I will keep my comments brief. What I like about HB 249 is it does parallel something that we've already expressed our support for in the R version of SB 100. I concur with all of Representative Hawker's comments and his concerns. This will allow us to operate and maintain a system that basically helps everyone. Our present surcharge of 50 cents caps us, and it actually we must subsidize our operations for 911 by taking parts of our other portions of our budget to do this. Your bill will allow us to do away with that. So not only does it enhance our ability to operate and maintain 911, it frees up monies that would otherwise be used elsewhere. So I strongly urge all of you, please pass this bill so that we can get back on the business of doing what we do best.
Thanks, Chief. Any questions for Chief Monaghan? Hearing none, we'll go next to Tim Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Rogers. I'm with the Alaska Municipal League. And we strongly support this bill. And as Representative Hawker said, it's not everything that we would hope for, but I think it strikes a very reasonable balance between the needs of local government, the concerns of both the legislature and the telecommunication industry. I would like to make a couple of things clear of what it does and doesn't do. First of all, it does not make local government whole on the cost of operating a 911 system. It will help offset the cost, but there will still be other tax revenues, general government revenues that will be required to operate the systems. Second of all, and I think this is a very important point, is it does help offset the loss of revenues previously provided by the state in the form of the revenue sharing safe communities programs and the community matching grant program, which was used in, to acquire some of the capital equipment that was needed to operate the system. The third thing it does not assess a fee on anybody that does not receive E911 service in rural areas. So unless local government is providing enhanced 911 service, there will not be a surcharge. Finally, it will help prevent delays in the implementation of upgrades to the E911 systems that are important in the ability to identify the location of E911 cell phone users. The new systems are very much like a sophisticated caller ID program that are available on telephones now, and you're all familiar with them. The cost for caller ID on a home phone runs between $5 and $6 a month, depending on your service provider, and it's a hugely popular option. What we're asking for is the ability to provide a vital life-saving service and be able to charge an amount significantly less than what telephone users are paying for their home caller ID service. And if I can, real quickly, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to comment on the FCC document that Representative Roekberg mentioned.
Go ahead, Tim.
That document addresses specifically cellular telephones, and what it says is that state and local government may not dictate to a cellular telephone company what items appear on a billing statement. It does not prevent state and local government from assessing fees and taxes on the bill, but it can't tell the telephone company how to itemize those on the bill. So it doesn't have any impact on this other than the fact that it prevents us from telling the telephone company that they have to have a line item on the bill that says 911 surcharge. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks. Any questions for Tim Rogers, Alaska Municipal League? Hearing, seeing none. It was nice to see you, Tim, the other day in Juneau. Are you still in Juneau?
No, I'm not. I'm back home. I wish we'd had some time to visit.
Yeah, I haven't seen you in a while. Well, nice to hear your voice and nice to have seen you.
Thanks.
We'll go next to Bill Doolittle.
Yes, for the record, my name is Bill Doolittle. I'm the project manager for the Municipality of Anchorage 911 program. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on the bill. Most of the points will be covered by other commenters. But if the bill will be held over, we notice that there might be a potential conflict in some language that's in the bill. On page 3.
What line?
Let's see, I'm looking at my copy here real quickly.
And are you on version F? Up on the top, you'll see it's the last letter of that digit, 24LS0853/F.
Yes, this is version F. I'm sorry, it's page 4. Line 24, where we look to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska to identify generally accepted industry standards. In current Alaska statutes 2935-131C, the Regulatory Commission is currently precluded from having any involvement with a 911 system. In the last couple of years, they've interpreted that language very strictly and have not been involved with 911 systems. So that might be a potential conflict.
Okay, so I'm going to interrupt just so we can really grasp this. So page 4 starts at line 22. A multi-line telecommunications system operator is considered to be in compliance with this section when the multi-line telecommunications system complies with E911, generally accepted industry standards as defined by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Okay, so just real quick, I hate to interrupt you, but so you're saying we should, you would prefer to strike that and not have the RCA regulate there? Or how would you, if you had your druthers, how would you change this?
Through the chair, the preference is to allow the Regulatory Commission to have some involvement with the technology that's being provided by the carriers. In the current statutes, there's a sentence, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska may not consider the enhanced 911 surcharge as revenue of the telephone company and has no jurisdiction over an enhanced 911 system. As I mentioned, they've interpreted that language very strictly, and they have stayed entirely out of 911 statewide. We believe that there would be a contribution from the Regulatory Commission in the deployment of technology, and the language in the bill starts to open that door for us.
Okay, go ahead with your testimony. Sorry to interrupt.
I have a question.
Oh, Representative Guttenberg also has a question.
Thank you. In these four lines, what, 23, 24, and 25, Mr. Doolittle, gives the industry accepted generally accepted standards, lets the RCA define them. If the RCA doesn't define them, is there some other place that they are defined?
Through the chair, Representative, the other alternative would let these be defined at the local level. This is enabling language that would allow municipalities to pass ordinances that are in compliance with this language but may be specific on a local basis. There are national standards for the provision of private switch alley, which is the generally accepted term for it, where a PBX owner buys an adjunct database and coordinates with the local phone company to provide accurate location records as part of their PBX extensions. I believe our preference would be to have some language that would make that uniform statewide.
Okay. I mean, just to comment, if it's not the RCA, it's got to be somebody else to do it statewide. It's got to be some other state agency, so I don't know who it would be.
Larry.
Thank
you,
Josh. Or a national standard.
Or national standard. Representative Roper, Representative Hawker.
Mr. Chairman, this language, I believe, received quite a bit of scrutiny, and we've lifted this language, obviously, from a version that received a great deal of attention in the other body. It was, as I read through this, it was my understanding that the desire and the intent was to create a requirement for a standardized system here.
Okay. Representative Roper, was that for me?
No, it's for Josh.
Okay, and we do have to hurry, so I want to get through everybody to testify, so make sure you signal to me if you have a question. Okay, any other questions for Mr. Doolittle? Seeing... I rushed, but I'm...
We're giving hand signals here.
Definitely, if you have a question, I'll give you time.
So
we go to Kenai next, and then we'll get to Kodiak. Kenai, is it Cop or Cope? Chuck Cop?
Good afternoon, Chair. This is Chuck Kopp, Chief of Police in Kenai, Alaska, and also Chair of the Alaska Chapter of the National Emergency Number Association. I do want to thank Representative Mike Hawker for bringing forward this critically needed legislation, which NENA does feel addresses the flexibility needed by municipalities to address increased enhanced 911 system demands. What we see is that the rapid rate that technology is being introduced to public consumers is outpaced public safety's ability to keep up with providing emergency services communications to those developments. This gives municipalities the flexibility and the funding mechanism to address the rising expectation of the public that public safety will be able to answer their 911 calls. Additionally, the language structuring what 911 surcharge revenues may be used for, we feel is right on the money. And again, we concur with Representative Hawker's opening statements regarding this language, and also support the requirement that boroughs and municipalities work out agreements regarding their 911 revenue expenditures when they share enhanced 911 systems. Having said that, I'll entertain any questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck. Seeing no questions, we'll go next to Ed Oberts with the Peninsula Borough.
Yeah, I appreciate it. This is Ed Oberts with the Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor's Office. We appreciate this legislation. A couple just real quick things that are somewhat of a concern to us. Normally we look to statutes to help guide the borough when we deal with issues that are related to the state, borough, and cities. I'm concerned about on page 3, or section 3, J, near the bottom of the page 3, where we won't potentially be able to use surcharge revenue until we actually enter into agreements with the cities, and in our case, probably with state troopers also. I just know from practical experience how difficult it is to work with various legal departments when you're talking governmental agencies. And if we work with the state, with the Department of Law, to actually reach agreements, get them approved by all the governing bodies and in place. So, again, ideally, statutes would help clarify, not create more confusion or workload for us. So I'd encourage you to maybe look at that section and see if there's an opportunity to help clarify that.
Appreciate your testimony and input, Ed. Actually, Representative Hawker's taking notes with both what you said and what other testifiers have commented on, so we appreciate that. Any questions? Did you have a second area? Representative Cott asked if you had a second area, Mr. Oberts.
Yeah, we have David Gibbs here, our emergency operations manager. If you have a moment, he has some more testimony for you.
Okay. If he could be brief, state your name and affiliation for the record and tell us your other area of concern.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair and members of the committee. My name is David Gibbs. I'm the emergency manager and 911 administrator for the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Specifically with Section J, we would ask that the section of line 30 that reads, before the borough may use revenue from an enhanced 911 surcharge, strike that phrase. We fully support sharing 911 revenue with the cities. We have been in a fairly lengthy process trying to negotiate cost-sharing agreements with the cities. The second change to the language I would like to see is on page 4. I'm looking at line 3. In regards to the Department of Public Safety, we would like to see the language read, basically, the Department of Public Safety also provides services as part of the enhanced 911 service, and add the phrase, and incurs costs, deleting the rest of that sentence. The department must be a party to the agreement. We think the Department of Public Safety provides law enforcement services, not necessarily 911 services. And I also need to be sure that our 911 program in the borough must continue pending agreements. The effect of these two pieces inclusion of this language actually may have the net effect of causing us to basically shut down our system. We are incurring 911 related costs as we speak, and this language potentially may preclude us from using any of our surcharge revenue from providing those services. That's all I have. I will entertain any questions. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks, David. I think those are important comments. Again, Representative Hawker, as the sponsor, is noting those. Any questions? At this time, there are no questions. We'll address that later in the bill dialogue, so don't think that because we're not responding immediately, we're not taking note of your concerns. So we will next go to the island of Kodiak, and Linda Freed is online. I'm told by Gabrielle, who's a friend of hers, that she is the city manager. Do you want to say hi to Gabrielle first, Linda?
Yes, thank you. Hi, Gabrielle. Sorry, we've been trading calls for the last week.
Hi, Linda. Mm-hmm. We'll catch up eventually.
I've asked everybody in the audience to leave. When you're done, just signal. I'll bring them back in. No, I'm kidding. Okay, why don't you state your affiliation for the record?
Thank you. For the record, my name is Linda Freed, and I am the city manager for the city of Kodiak. I'd also like to note for the record that the city of Kodiak is the public safety answering point for those portions of the region that actually receive E911 service. So the city is the direct service provider. Although the Kodiak Island Borough is the entity that levies the E911 surcharge, and we do have an existing agreement in place. I'd like to provide some brief comments that generally the city of Kodiak concurs with all of the previous commenters. We support this bill. We believe it's a good compromise that meets the current needs of that portion of the Kodiak region that receives E911 service. However, we do have a concern with the issue of the Department of Public Safety and what the definition would be for uses the enhanced 911 system. As the public safety answering point for the Kodiak region, all E911 calls come into the City of Kodiak Dispatch Center. However, we do dispatch the Department of Public Safety troopers when those calls come in and they're outside our jurisdiction. However, they don't incur any costs related to the E911 system directly. So our concern is just what the term uses, the enhanced 911 system. We believe that we have a good agreement in place. We spent quite a bit of time working it out between the city and the borough. We believe it meets our current local needs. We're not sure that we need the Department of Public Safety to sign on to that because we have operational agreements with them that are separate from the E911 system. In closing, I'd like to say we support the bill. We would very much like to see this bill passed this year. We believe it does provide a great framework for local governments to provide this very important public safety service. Thanks for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Thanks, Linda. I don't see any questions at this time. So we will next, and I'll keep public testimony open on the bill for the hearing itself into early next week when we bring the bill back. But I wanted to allow Jim Rowe the final word, at least for today's hearing. And Jim, before you even start getting into the dialogue and you state your name and affiliation for the record, during your testimony, I want you to note how many members you have, because I know this affects them. and state the number, actually, because I want to thank you for not bringing them online. Sometimes we have legislation where folks bring every single member of party online, and we'd be here all night. And so thank you for that courtesy, for you testifying solely on this. But go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had to beat them back. This is Jim Rowe. I'm the director of the Alaska Telephone Association. This represents 14 rural local exchange telephone companies in the state. We represent areas from Eagle River, Palmer, Wasilla, Levelock, Kaktovik, Barrow, Southeast, all over. These are most of the entities right now that are assessing their members' surcharges. We note now the surcharge in communities, municipalities with 100,000 is capped firmly at 50 cents. For the rest of the state, where there's an E911 system, it's capped at 75 cents. We are looking today with the new version that the sponsor brought out of going to 4 times that amount from the municipality of Anchorage, and to $2 from, I believe it's 65 cents in the Fairbanks area right now, and maximum 75 cents in the other areas. That's considerable. We have an aversion to any taxing, which is what we're doing as telephone companies. It's perceived by customers that we're collecting this, that we're raising rates. Also, we're interested in the state of increasing the penetration, not having people feeling like they can't afford it. Emergency services are something we're very interested in. We also would like to see legislation passed this year. The sponsor mentioned that there's been compromise. There absolutely has. And he also mentioned that this went back to last year we were working on this. And that's absolutely the truth. Compromise we've made this year, and I have to disagree with the bill sponsor on this item. This is not a 911 bill. It's an enhanced 911 bill. Looking over the makeup of this committee, you might not realize there are many communities in this state that do not have any point at which a 911, press three digits, 911, has any public safety answering point to which it can be sent. We have not addressed that, and that was something that we pushed very hard last year. A compromise position by the Alaska Telephone Association was we might not be able to get this by. Let's see if we can get something passed for those of you who represent more urban areas, not for our most rural citizens in the state. They're not on the table. They're not going to be addressed by this. Comments I've heard as far as the amount along the testimony, both in the Senate and our House, some people wanted to use this for public works when they're dispatched. Some people said they needed $4. Some people said they needed $5. Maybe $2 isn't enough. Maybe it has to be more than that. We're talking about for each wireless telephone. We're talking about each wireline telephone. We're talking about families who might have 3 children and three cell phones for them, perhaps a cell phone for each adult, maybe a fax machine in the house, maybe a line. Are we talking about $10, $12, $15 coming to a household? If you have to press 911 and get emergency services, that's important. This cap is different. This is a soft cap. It isn't a mandatory cap. Every municipal government can go to the people that it's representing and delivering those emergency services to, where there's enhanced 911, and go to them and say, we need more money to give you these services, and those people can vote for it no matter what that amount is. We've heard people testify that they don't want to have to go to them, that they can be kicked out of office if, in hindsight, the municipal voters didn't want it. I would like to share, as a last thought, a quote for this committee. This is not a new concept. This quote is from Abraham Lincoln, his first inaugural address, 1861. This country, with its institutions, belongs to the people who inhabit it. Whenever they shall grow weary of the existing government, they can exercise their constitutional right of amending it or their revolutionary right to dismember or overthrow it. To those people who think they can be kicked out of office, they're right. That's not a new concept. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Jim. Jim, I had one question, and I'll open up to other committee questions. That question being, what amount would you like to see with respect to the surcharge? I've heard varying rates. I've heard that you don't want to go, your association and membership prefers less than $2. Is that accurate? $2 is the highest, but you'd prefer $1.50?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. We would $1.50 will triple the amount one of my members will be billing. It will double the amount many of them are billing. we supported, I gave testimony in the Senate that we supported very firmly the amount of 150 in there. It's not a good thing for us, but we're serving the same people the emergency services people are. We think a threefold increase and a doubling is significant. Yes, 150 would be what we would like to. We would support that. I would testify firmly in support of a 150 increase.
Secondly, and lastly, from me, in the House Judiciary Committee, Senator Bundy had a seatbelt bill up, and I ran and talked to him after the committee adjourned and asked if he agreed with the vehicle being Representative Hawker's. He said, yes, I do, and Mike's going to cover it. And then I said, do you have any dollars on $2.50? And he said, no. And he said, my bill was a $1.50 charge. So at least he's not here to testify, but that's what he said to me. So I guess that's not a question, but a statement. So that's something for the committee to consider, and I want to respect Representative Hawker's opinion as well. Any other questions for Mr. Rowe with this?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Jim.
May I just say I really appreciate the effort of the legislature on both sides, both houses, and on both sides of the aisle working on this. There's been a lot of work, and it's good legislation. I hope we can get something passed.
Thank you, Jim. Representative Roper.
Just a background question. I'm not that familiar with this whole issue, and I just wanted to check with Mr. Rowe. Given this bill, our current current statutes, do your membership have to charge any surcharge at all? Is there any? There's no mandate, or is there a mandate currently? And is there still the differential in size of area in this bill?
Representative, through the chair, when the municipality has an enhanced 911 system, we are mandated to do that.
Well, what about the other areas that aren't, they're not, there's no enhanced 911?
Federal rules necessitate that 911 be available, 911 dialing be available everywhere in the country. We can do 911 dialing, three-digit dialing everywhere. We just have some communities where there's no place to send it. Telephone communications demand that somebody pick up the phone. My expectation would be, and we tried last year to get the state to have a default PSAP, not that the folks would be handy necessarily, but at least that they could have an emergency phone call recorded somewhere. That was found very unacceptable, and I think was probably one of the problems for trying to get legislation passed last year.
So now under federal law, are you assessing charges for 911 to a call point?
Representative Roberg, through the chair. No, absolutely not. Only charges can only be where there's enhanced 911. Okay. No, there are no charges elsewhere, nor are there allowed to be.
So the issue is actual a response or a responder, service to a responder is your point then. Okay.
Representative Ledoux?
I was just going to ask you, because you mentioned some of the areas in my district, for example, like Leavelock. Do those areas have 911 service, period?
Some of them don't, through the chair. Some of them don't, Representative Ledoux. I can't speak particularly for Leavelock. I dealt with some of these communities last year. I could get a list of some of the communities. I can't say I can hit all of them. One example we had last year was Antioch, which is a larger community, certainly. And in the daytime, they had a local group called the Dragon Slayers that I think the hours were 8 to 5, they would pick up emergency calls. After that time, emergency phone calls, that is, dialed 911, would be routed through Bethel in their case. But there are some areas, but the technology we can do anywhere. I can't do it, but the technicians can do that. You can press the three buttons.
Jim,
we can do that anywhere. We just don't know where to route the call for some of the communities. I'll certainly find out on Leavelock for you.
Thanks, Jim. And then follow-up from Representative Ledoux.
I know in a number of my communities, we've got village public safety officers that a 911 call could be routed to. But for some reason, if you dial 911 out in Old Harbor or Yuzinki or some of those places, it doesn't go to a recording. It just goes nowhere. I've never understood that.
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, you're absolutely correct. However, even where you have village public safety officers, they're out walking around sometimes. They're not sitting by the phone waiting for that. They're also single individuals. That's not a permanent place. Most of the local residents know where to call. It's their brother, their family, it's their friends, and they can do it through normal local dialing. It's probably the person who comes into that community and doesn't know the local folks and gets injured that's our real concern.
Representative Cott.
Hey, Mr. Chairman. Jim, sorry I missed you last week. There's a section of the bill on page 2 that requires that when a municipality imposes a surcharge or the surcharge is changed, that the municipality shall notify in writing the telephone customers. And as part of that, it goes on to further state that that notification is actually going to come through the telephone company that's servicing the area. What's your reaction to that? I mean, it's, on the one hand, we're saying...
Through the chair, I think that's a challenge. It's one I actually have highlighted here. I saw it for the first time today. Certainly, the telephone companies are going to be very careful about notifying their customers are on their own. That's not an issue. I appreciate very much the concept that it should be up to the muni when they make a change in the charge to get some sort of notice out. I have talked with some technical people about this, and we feel like it could be quite a challenge dealing with different telephone companies. Dealing with only one, I think it can be worked out. Writing legislation where we're going to deal with munis, I think it's a challenge. I haven't got all the answers yet, but I got this wording this morning.
Casey, no other questions. Jim, I appreciate it. We'll bring you back if we need to next week as we continue the dialogue on the bill. And I'm going to... You bet, Jim. We'll go next to Representative Hawker, maybe some brief responses, and then we'll adjourn and keep everything open for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, here in wrap-up. Specifically to address some of the questions recently raised here.
Sure.
I'd just like to remind folks here that this bill providing this enhanced 911 surcharge, this is a permissive only. This surcharge is an up to $2 per line. There's nothing mandating anything. Beyond that line requires an affirmative vote of the community that would be affected. So I want to really make it very, very clear. This bill does not impose any fees. That would be up to local communities where, again, the local control self-determination should prevail. I would like to emphasize also that that $2 level is truly a compromise position. I think it's a fair compromise. And if you indulge me and let me...
Sure.
Reference, you know, and I can certainly appreciate, I very much appreciate the position of taken by our phone systems, but they do not want to be a taxing entity for government. I've had conversations with the phone systems, and they don't care what we charge for 911 as long as they don't have to bill it on their telephone bills. So to that end, I mean, I can appreciate that point. They don't want it to make it appear that the phones are costing what they're costing. And it's not a cost that they're incurring. So, and it's a very legitimate position. So there was a lot of room here for a bargain. There's a lot of room to work this together. And we've worked with, over the last 2 years, over the summer, our major carriers, and if I may quote from just a couple of letters here from other major phone carriers in the state, AT&T Alascom, the committee substitute with the $2 per line ceiling and provisions to exceed that with voter approval, represents a fair compromise.
That one, is that Mike Felix?
That would be, Catlin signed that one, Director of Government Relations. GCI, again, GCI supports the bill because it does include a cap not exceeding $2. This cap may be raised and lowered only through a municipal election. Again, and it's signed by Ms. Tindall, recognizing the compromise. Municipal League, they said, boy, they want to charge $3, but there's the point. I mean, there's the spread. I mean, they want more, I think there needs to be a break. And I recognize that the ATA folks there are
zero.
In another position. They, as you heard said, no taxes anywhere, anytime, any place. Also, MTA, without referencing it, allows a municipality to impose $2. This cap is important because MTA provides us with the assurance that this surcharge will not get out of hand. I just want to emphasize, this really has been a compromise number.
And I know you have.
In this case, we've got a predominance of our industry carriers that have accepted the $2 level as a reasonable compromise, as we've got, and also some communities, and I'm sure members could speak to it, were truly, I mean, this bill died last year because some folks were unwilling to give up just even the issue of a cap. So we've all come a long way. Last point, statewide need for 911 services is huge in this state, as all of our statewide infrastructure needs are. I mean, you know, we need schools, we need water and sewer, we literally need fundamental life safety delivery systems in communities throughout the state, including 911. And I've given my commitment to Mr. Rowe and every one of our the municipal league and other members of the and law enforcement that I am very happy to work on what it takes in this state to enhance these service deliveries in it, right, but that I truly believe ought to be in another vehicle. And then lastly, as Representative Cott was pointing out, that it was being asked in this version of the bill that when a change is made, that the phone customers receive notification of that. Concern we'd had was that the municipality is not privy to the database of a phone company. You know, they're not entitled to know who you're delivering that phone service to. So we did add that language that said that the phone company would be responsible for distributing that notification requirement, but also the line following that one states, and if I can get to it here without losing my place, the line following that states, and this is then the operative line, however, the municipality shall pay any reasonable incremental costs associated with the notification. So we really believe we've protected the phone companies. And with that, sir, would certainly give consideration in working with our co-sponsors in the Senate on this and considering our concerns raised by the Kenai Peninsula Borough.
Great. And we'll, like I said, we'll expedite it. I would like to make some compromise here and look to it. So we'll hold the bill. Representative Cott, any last comments from any committee members?
Mike, you bring this forward. Certainly an important issue. And I appreciate the letters by the various companies that are buying into the compromise. And I just wonder how many constituent letters have bought into that compromise. But
If I might, sir, if I may respond to that.
Representative Hawker.
You don't need to respond to that.
Mr. Anderson, constituents, if you recall up in our Eagle River neighborhood and, frankly, a street that you used to represent, that I now represent, we had a terribly unfortunate incident with Mrs. Godfrey, who the Anchorage Police Department were unable to get to as she lay on the ground, shot and bleeding. And that's why this is so important, sir, and our constituents do support it.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Something Mr. Rowe brought up and something I brought up earlier, caps on households, multi-lines in a household, two, three lines for the kids, two, three cell phones. And on the other end of the equation, large commercial enterprises with many lines where they might only be charged for one or two phone numbers. I mean, I don't know if there's anybody here technical can ask us, or have those been addressed before in other committees or in the other body?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I believe it's a Section 4 on multi-line systems. Mm-hmm. PBX systems is set to address that issue, and it allows local control, self-determination on that specific issue. I think particularly mobile phones, cell phones, I think there's a very rational direct connectivity, no pun intended, between the fact that each one of you who is carrying your cell phone and your children are carrying cell phones, you're expecting if there's who knows where your children are right now? They may need to dial 911 from that location. That device, frankly, needs to, is their point of contact. So I do believe, and it was a policy decision that has had to be negotiated through here, getting us to accept that each individual line was the right base for the surcharge. And likewise, say in a home, there's some question. Well, say I've got two lines into my home. How does government invade the home to say that line's being used for a telephone and that line's not? That line's being used for a fax machine. But yet, again, I emphasize, fax machine's got the little dial thing right on there, 911. Do the same, and that's the whole point of the enhanced 911. I mean, there's the person, and they happen to hit that button on their fax machine. Call goes out to 911. The responder knows where that fax machine is, and someone dialed 911 from it.
Fax machines one issue certainly. Certainly there are same issue arises on dedicated phone lines for internet connections. Dan, I'm just wondering about the trunk lines. I mean, are we going to hear somebody next week that'll deal with
it? We can. I think Jim Rowe is listening and can probably bring someone.
And I would ask Mr. Chairman that we had Mr. Doolittle involved in that as well.
Oh, for sure. Okay, Representative Roper had his hand up, then Cott, let's wrap it up, though, if you don't mind.
Very quickly, Mr. Chairman, page 4, line 24, the issue I think Mr. Doolittle brought up, there was a term there, E911. I think it's probably a typo, if I'm not mistaken. It should say enhanced 911. And also this the idea that E911, generally accepted industry standards as defined by the RCA. Mr. Chairman, if we could or the sponsor could get a letter from RCA whether there is any such thing as enhanced generally accepted industry practices as defined by the RCA, because there is a conflict of law issue with the 131C provision. So,
okay.
And that is true. I think there is a conflict of law if there's no definitions or if they can't regulate it. It says in 131 versus this one. That is Mr. Doolittle's point, and I think I agree with him. But
well, we will get a response to that.
Yeah, just to define that and or even shift to a different standard if there you need to have that standard.
And like, we will work with all our co-sponsors on pointing that together.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike, just in real briefly, was there any consideration given to the current statute which exempts those perhaps larger companies which have 100 or more lines that we currently have exempted? We charge up to the 100, I believe, and then over 100, it's free. So in essence, what we have done back then when we did this is we have penalized our small businesses. We haven't reached that pinnacle of success, and we've rewarded the larger businesses. We have it on the backs of the small businesses and the consumers, the you and I's, and our neighbors. I mean, was there any thought given to excluding that provision, which in my mind would bring in probably another, I forget the number, but it's thousands of new revenue fees.
Through the chair, Representative Cott, it was my personal preference to follow your counsel on that particular issue. But yes, again, it has been a long and compromising road that this bill has taken itself down, and that item was one of those points that at this juncture has been the subject of compromise, and we do have that 100-line limit in the bill as it's before you, sir.
Good. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Like I say, we'll keep the bill open for public hearing and such for discussion, and I think members are aware we have some bills up next week, so we will see you next, I guess, on Monday, and we will adjourn today's meeting at 5:22. Adjourn.